You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Jets podcast, April 18th, 2019. This is your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com. Great to have you with us today on this Thursday. It is a mailbag Thursday, 1 week away from the start of the 2019 NFL draft. A draft that's probably not going to be as exciting for the Jets as last year's event was because, of course, last year we knew that the Jets were taking a quarterback. Now the Jets have their quarterback, Sam Darnold. Now they're trying to build around him. You know, we'll see who they take next week. But we're going to the mailbag here. These are questions submitted through the comment section of gangrenenation.com. Thanks so much to everybody who sent in questions this week. As I say every week, we could not do this mailbag show without you. You can't do a mailbag show without mailbag questions, so the questions you send in are always greatly appreciated. First question, in terms of travel only, is this the easiest schedule in NFL history? Never leaving the Eastern time zone, Oakland and Dallas are at home, luckily. This will have to be the least miles flown slash driven in the 16-game era for any NFL team. The schedule sets up so nicely if the team was good. Sadly, not sure on that. So the NFL schedule came out last night. It actually leaked during the day. There were reports out during the day from the Daily News about what the Jets' schedule was. And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on the schedule because we already knew the 16 opponents the Jets were getting. We just found out the dates and times of the games. So they open with Buffalo on September 8th at 1 o'clock game. There's a Monday night game the next week, September 16th, against the Browns. They travel to New England, a 1 o'clock game on September 22nd. The bye was week 4. Eagles come next October 6th at 1. The Jets visit the Eagles. Then they host the Cowboys October 13th at 4:25. They host New England October 21st, a Monday night game. October 27th at 1 o'clock, they travel to Jacksonville. November 3rd at 1 o'clock, they travel to Miami. They have a home game against the Giants on November 10th at 1 o'clock. They travel to Washington November 17th at 1 o'clock. Host Oakland November 24th at 1 o'clock. At Cincinnati December 1st, 1 o'clock. Against Miami, hosting Miami December 8th at 1 o'clock. At Baltimore Thursday night game, 8:20 p.m. December 12th. Hosting the Steelers December 22nd at 1 o'clock, and then at Buffalo December 29th, 1 o'clock game. And, once we get to the late season, some of those games can be flexed out. My reflections on this are I typically want to buy week later rather than earlier because late in the season you're kind of banged up. You're looking for some rest heading into the stretch run. So not wild about the week 4 bye, but last time the Jets had an early bye was 2015, and that ended up actually working out pretty well for them because they got a little banged up early in the season, so the bye served them well. So you never know how it works. I don't love the fact that all three of their short weeks are road games. You never want to have the road game off the short week because it's tough enough. You already lose a day, then you spend the day traveling. I don't love the fact that the Thursday night game, you have one Thursday night game every year. I don't love the fact it's in December when the team's beat up, a 3-day week, short week. I know you get like the 10-day stretch after the Thursday night game, but I don't like the idea of the 3-day week coming in December. I'd rather get that one out of the way early. But the big positive is the lack of travel. Jets will spend their full regular season in the Eastern time zone. Now, look, how much of a big deal is it? New England's never a long trip, but it's never an easy trip. So the quality of the team certainly means more than anything. But I think, on the fringes, on the margins, it certainly can't hurt the team that they don't have many long road trips. If you follow the Jets for a long time, how awful some of these trips to the West Coast have been for this team. Just the long trip. I don't know what it is, whether it's the late start or just all the travel, and I'm sure the travel adds up. I'm sure it, if you remember 2008, if you were a fan back then, how the Jets went out to the West Coast 4 times and lost all 4 games, and you wondered whether that impacted them, whether it was just the team was a little tired from all the travel. I mean, I don't know. It's really tough for me to say, but I don't think it hurts. I think it's certainly, it's one of those things that might help the team a little bit at the margins stay fresh. And it was just kind of the perfect storm that got them the schedule, because you know, you have your three division rivals you play twice. Then you have one division in your conference you play. That's the AFC North, where you have teams that are based in the Eastern time zone. Then you have one division from the other conference. So that's this year, that's the NFC East for the Jets. So again, a bunch of teams in the Eastern time zone. And Dallas, the one team that's not in the Eastern time zone, is slated to visit the Jets, because the Jets visited Dallas last time they played. And then you have one team from the AFC West, which is the Raiders, which you get a home game for. And one team from the AFC South, Jacksonville. These are the teams that finished in the same – the AFC West and the AFC South teams are the teams that finished in the same spot in the standings as the Jets a year ago in their respective divisions. And Jacksonville is an AFC South team in the Eastern time zone. So, you know, it just kind of panned out this year. I don't know that it's going to make a big difference for this team, but, I don't think it could hurt. I think it may help the team be a little fresher heading into, you know, you have to remember – 16-game NFL season is very grueling. I mean, the hits you take over the course of 4 months, I think any little advantage you can get certainly helps. So, I mean, is it going to be the difference between the Jets winning, you know, 4 games last year and 10 games this year? No. But, I can't imagine it hurting. I think it certainly is one of the more fortuitous travel schedules an NFL team has faced in recent memory. Next question. What are your general feelings on trading assets for a guy that you then have to give a large contract to, like a Frank Clark? It seems to me like that requires the allocation of too many team-building resources, both money and draft picks. Well, I think that, you know, when you talk about when we get into trade discussions, contracts matter. And the fact that, let's just say, like a Frank Clark, if you were talking a month ago, maybe a Dee Ford, the fact that you have to give these guys big contracts reduces their trade value, because part of a player's value is his contract. Why are draft picks so valuable when you hit on them? It's because you get a player who's good, who doesn't cost you anything. Most players who are good in this league cost a ton. So essentially, when you're talking about the salary cap, if you get a good player on a rookie deal, you get the same value as the team that's given out the expensive free agent contract. But you also get to add more players because you have not spent much money. The other team spent a lot of money to get a good player. You have a good player and money to spend. So, you know, in a case like a Frank Clark, if Seattle's talking about, you know, second round, I don't know, I'm just using the Dee Ford comparison because, you know, edge rusher who was available. The Chiefs got a second round pick for Dee Ford. Would I give up more than a second? I mean, I think that's a lot to give up, especially for a team that does not have many draft. Jets have to get some draft picks in here. Jets need to hit on some young players. So I think that's something that certainly does not help Frank Clark's trade value if indeed the Seahawks are looking to trade him. And yeah, I do think, you know, if you're talking about a second-round pick and a $20 million a year contract or so, it's probably too rich for the Jets' blood, because the Jets don't have a second-round pick this year. They did not have a second-round pick last year. So if we're talking about next year's second-round pick, that's 3 straight years with no second-round pick. That really, really reduces your – if you go 3 straight years with no second-round pick, it really, really hurts your odds of being able to find a player in the draft. See, the way you have to view the draft is almost like a lottery, a weighted lottery maybe, where second-round pick is one of your best chances to hit. Your goal in the draft is not to hit on every pick. Your goal on the draft is to hit on enough picks. And you reduce your margin for error greatly when you lose your second-round pick. So you can't go 3 years without a second-round pick. I think that would be very costly for the Jets. And the fact that, you know, you have to give this guy a big contract, it's like you said, you have two assets with which to improve your team, basically. You have draft picks and you have cap space. So when you're giving up a premium draft pick, like a second-rounder, and a lot of cap space, I mean, you better be getting a superstar level player. And Frank Clark's a good player. I don't think Frank Clark's a superstar level player, though. Next question. As unlikely as it is, if the Jets have a 2017 Saints-esque draft and get 3 or 4 quality rookie starters, does this become a playoff team on paper? Yes. I think the answer to that is a pretty clear yes. Now, you have to remember that Saints 2017 draft class was a historic draft class. I mean, they got 4 quality players. They got Lattimore, they got Kamara, Ramczyk, and Marcus Williams. So, I mean, those are 4 guys who stepped right into the lineup and played great. And if you wonder how big of an impact that could make, you have to remember that 2 years ago, the Saints were a team coming off a bunch of 7-9 seasons. They were always having cap problems. I mean, there was talk about Sean Payton. Sean Payton was always the subject of rumors. Where was Sean Payton going to go? Was Sean Payton, you know, going to go to the Rams after they fired Jeff Fisher? There was always links to Sean Payton in Dallas. It was Sean Payton going to take Jason Garrett's job? There was all this talk about, you know, is he leaving? Is this the end of the Saints' run? Drew Brees, you know, wasn't getting any younger. And look what happened. Look what those players added. And that's the beauty of the NFL is, listen, you know as well as I do all the bad decisions the Jets have made in the last 8-9 years. But the beauty of the NFL is that you're never really that far away. NFL is a quick turnaround league. NFL is not a league where you need to, you're never 5 years away in the NFL. In today's NFL, you're never 5 years away. You really can turn over an entire roster 2 to 3 years. And if you hit, if you really hit things well in the draft, you know, three or four players, that's a big deal. You add three or four quality starters to any team, you're going to improve that team tremendously. If you have 3 to 4 impact starters, I mean, that changes the complexion of your team, especially if you have a quarterback you believe in. Now, I know Sam's only entering his second year, but I think the fan base is pretty solidly behind him. I think this fan base is pretty optimistic about where he is as a player. So if you add 3 or 4 quality players to a team that has a quarter, you hope has a quarterback, team that has other quality players, you know, some decent receivers, really top-notch safety, added a really good linebacker. If you add 3 to 4 good starters to that team, absolutely. This team, I think it's a playoff team. I think it's definitely a playoff team now. But you also have to remember how few rookies come in and contribute right away. That Saints 2017 draft class was also pretty historic. It's not necessarily, you know, if you fail to recreate that Saints 2017 draft class, that does not mean you're drafting poorly. I don't think it's reasonable to expect a class like that. I think it's that's you know, it's not so easy to get that many immediate starters. If you get 4 starters, period, even if they take 2-3 years to develop, you've done very well in a draft. Next question, extensions. If Jamal Adams has another all-pro caliber season, should the Jets extend him after the season before the market becomes too expensive? Landon Collins pretty much blew the ceiling open, so who knows how it's going to be expensive? Who knows how expensive it's going to be in another few years? Yeah, I would agree with that. So I think there's one great unknown right now, and that's the collective bargaining agreement, which is nearing its conclusion. And, you know, if you go back about a decade or so and you remember the Mike Tannenbaum era, kind of fell apart for the Jets for many reasons. A lot of bad player evaluations, bad draft picks. Sanchez did not pan out. Some suspect moves in any number of areas, you know, bad philosophies, not valuing draft picks. But, you know, one of the things people forget about with the Tannenbaum era is Tannenbaum managed the cap in a way as though he believed that the cap would always continue going up. The way he managed the salary cap, he was kind of projecting, if you look at the way the moves the Jets made, he was kind of projecting that the cap would always keep going up. Well, what happened with the 2011 collective bargaining agreement? The cap actually went down, actually went a little lower. And that's one of the reasons the Jets got caught in such a bad salary. Now, part of it was they gave out bad contracts, but part of it was that the way the Jets structured their team, they were expecting the cap went going down really hurt them because they were not planning for that. And that was one of the reasons they were in such a cap crunch by the time Tannenbaum left. So the great unknown is the next collective bargaining agreement, because if the cap goes down, then maybe it's not such a great move, because then you'll see salaries start to go down proportionally with it. But if you look at where the league is going, and part of it's, you know, when the next TV deal comes into play, but part of it is, but if you look at the situation, I think in today's NFL, if things continue, if you have a hunch that things are going to continue the way they've been going, if the business of the league continues as it's going, it almost makes, I've come to the conclusion that it makes sense to extend a player as early as possible if you think he's good, because the cap has been going up. So if you think things, if business projections are staying the same, if you get the sense that the owners are not going to take a hard line and try and reduce the salary cap, then I think, you know, you're almost always better negotiating a deal early, because the cap's just going to keep going up. If the cap keeps going up, then salaries are going to keep going up with it. And the other thing is, a guy like Adams, after year 3, he'll still have 2 years left on his rookie deal because the Jets will pick up his fifth-year option. If that happens, then essentially you might be able to get Adams to give some money back. You might not pay top dollar for Adams because Adams is maybe looking at this and saying like, okay, well, I'm not going to be a free agent for another 2 years. So in order to get something done, I'm going to have to give something to the Jets because the Jets still have him under team control for 2 more years. There's not necessarily the urgency. There's not necessarily there's not necessarily a ton of urgency for the Jets to get something done. You know, they could play it out. They're perfectly fine playing it out for 2 more years. So then Adams might be saying, you know something, I want a deal that's going to set me up for life. I want the big contract now, which means maybe I don't wait. Maybe I take a little bit less because I give something back to incentivize the Jets to make a deal now when they don't have to. So I think it makes a lot of sense because you might be able to get the player for cheaper than you would long term, both because he still has a couple of years on this deal, so he'll have to give something in order for you to make a deal, but also because the longer you wait, if the cap keeps going up, and that's the assumption we'll make, if the cap keeps going up, it's only going to get more expensive for him to wait, and then he'll gain leverage. Once he's about to hit free agency, the Jets lose all their leverage, and then he can say, well, now I have to pay. So you almost always, I think, cost yourself in the long run if you wait these things out.
Next question emailed to me, should the Jets make a run at Josh Norman of Washington? You know, I have not heard anything that makes me think Norman is going to be available. Just a few weeks back, Jay Gruden talked about him as a major part of the team this season. So I mean, I don't think he's going to be there. I have to be honest as well. I don't think this is the type of player I'd be looking to acquire at this point. I think it's difficult to rely on the trade market, but Norman is 31 years old. He's going to be 32 in December. So, I mean, that's not unless I can get somebody like that for very cheap. You know, we just talked a little bit earlier about trade value, and I mentioned how contracts mattered. I mean, age matters too, because if I'm getting a guy who's 24 and I know if I extend him, he's going to be around for a number of years. He might be around for like 5 years or so. That's different from getting a guy who's going to be 32 in the season, where I know most I'm getting maybe a couple of years out of him. So age matters too. I mean, I don't love the idea of trading for a guy on the wrong side of 30. I'm not sure he's available either. I haven't even heard anything that suggests to me, maybe I've missed something, I've not heard anything that suggests to me that he's really on the trade block. Sometimes you'll hear rumors about some of these players. Ultimately, I just have to say, I mean, I'm not wild about the idea of the Jets giving up draft picks at this point, because they really need to start hitting on some of these picks. They need to get some premium young talent in here on rookie deals. So I'm not wild about the general idea of the Jets trading picks. I mean, there are scenarios where, I'm not saying that you never trade a pick if you're the Jets, but the scenarios where I would make a pick are where it's just a deal that's too good to pass up. So, I mean, unless Washington's practically giving him away, which I don't think they will, Norman's probably not a guy I'd look to acquire. I mean, I think at this point of the year, it's very difficult to count on your ability to upgrade your roster through trades or free agency. I think, you know, it can happen. There could be a surprise cut somewhere. There might be a guy out there available who can help your team who hasn't signed because, I don't know, maybe he's injured. You know, it's plausible, but you can't really count on it at this point. I mean, the time for improving this roster through adding veterans was back in March. And the team you have right now is largely what your team is going to look like on opening day, aside from, you know, adding your draft picks. But I don't think that I'm not sure that there are many avenues by which the Jets are going to be able to improve that cornerback position unless they draft somebody early, which I'm not sure they're going to do. That's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Have a great Thursday, everybody, and we'll be back again tomorrow to close out the week.